Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
If you can hear me, I want you to think of a thumb on silk, or a brush on the microphone, or a soft padding of cloth with oil paint on canvas. It's a way to hypnotize the Americans. It's a way to hypnotize and change their mind. I've seen this done in science fiction, in Star Trek, the Landru episode, where, are you of the body of Landru? And I've seen it done Chauncey Gardner in Being There. And I see it done now, where people talk softly. It's called HSMR. Is that it? Or ASMR? Yeah, something like that. And it's a thing, and I wrote about it. And it's a way to control your mind. And we'll try to do that with Jeff Carlin, WGN producer of the Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis, and me, John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist of the Chicago Tribune and member of the Tribune's editorial board. Joining us this week is Scott Stanis, Tribune cartoonist par excellence. And you know where you are? I want you to wake up, Chicago. Don't go to sleep. That's what they want you to do. And when you sleep, you know what happens? There's a pod right next to your bed, and a new you comes out of it. You know that movie, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, HSMR, whatever the hell they call it. This is the Chicago way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
What is with that HSMR thing? What is it again? I wrote about it.
ASMR, Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response.
Yes, and Jeff Carlin, you're a man of science, and Scott Stanis, you're a man of
cartoons?
Culture and cartoons, but how does ASMR control our mind?
I don't know where you're putting that H in there.
I know, it's just...
I don't know what that is.
Because I think of it as a virus of some kind. probably sexually transmitted. But how does it work, Jeff?
ASMR essentially touches the reptile part of your brain.
So we talk like this.
Yeah.
Like we're all on public radio.
Well, sort of.
Do you have any Peruvian flutes?
We'll find some.
I mean, even in the mockery of public radio, where they talk like that, like talk like this, it's used.
Well, the ASMR is now very popular, and it's hugely popular. It's hugely popular, and it's so much so that there was the Stella Artois. I think it was. Was it Stella, the beer ad in the Super Bowl that was ASMR?
Was it? It was. I wrote the Alicia Keys.
No, Zoe. Kravitz.
Zoe Kravitz, and she was brushing.
She brushes the rolls, the bottle.
Right.
And so the idea is that essentially, this is a very base explanation of it, but the idea is that the sensory part of your brain, you get enough of their senses to fire automatically in your brain. You know, the electric signals, they kind of line up. In theory, line up, and then you have an automatic response. So your body's like, "Whoa, what was that?" And so your brain fires because it's essentially same concept of where, like, if you vibrate a glass enough, it'll shatter. Everything has a resonance point. the electrical system in your body has a resonance point. So if you can hit those in the right sequence, you can create other responses. Some people, there are pleasure responses. Some of it's a relaxing response. Some of it can be anger, kind of similar to what the CIA did with sound and trying to get people to, you know, to become angry and
what was
aggressive.
Who was the paranoid on radio, WLS at night, that you worked on his show?
Art Bell.
Yeah, we listened to that. Now, all I want to know about ASMR is Bob Ross,
yeah,
the bad landscape painter, and...
Bad landscape painter? Wait
and,
a minute.
Painting, 20-minute paintings?
They were fantastic,
oh,
and he broke
on.
It down to make it simple. How can you knock Bob Ross? That's...
Just
that's,
remember
that's
this.
It's like hating puppies.
Yeah.
ASMR.
It has the word ass in it, John.
It's about slowing Asper. Down. It's about relaxing. It's about tranquility. And all I want you to do, Scott Stannis, when you leave this room, is to find the Conrad Aiken story, Silent Snow, Secret Snow, about a little boy named Paul who is going mad, and he starts listening to the snow. And at the end of it, which is quite terrifying, the hiss was now becoming a roar. The whole world was a vast moving screen of snow. But even now it said peace. It said remoteness. It said sleep. Wake up, Chicago. Don't go to sleep. The pods will be outside your bed. You will. You know, we saw this movie, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Well, now we have the invasion of the 14 candidates.
Are you Bob Ross? Fan of Bob Ross?
I watched him just because I was mesmerized.
Yeah.
You get mesmerized
you too.
Because
oh my god, when I used to work mornings or do morning radio, and you get home, I'd be home at like 11 in the afternoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bob Ross would be on PBS, and mm-hmm. there's nothing better than just decompressing listening to Bob Ross.
You know what? Smoking a bong and watching public television in the afternoon is not my cup of tea.
Anymore.
Okay? It's not my cup of tea anymore. It might have been 40 years ago. 40 years ago, it was, you know, Popeye cartoons at 8 o'clock.
Everything old is new again. Come on, John.
8 o'clock in the morning, but it was those black and white Popeye cartoons. You know, the old ones,
sure.
The awesome
wow.
ones. You know, the real ones. But not this Bob Ross. As an artist, tell me, my kids go, oh, Bob Ross. Everybody knows Bob Ross.
Yeah.
I'm like, Jesus.
No, it was a cultural thing.
Your brains
thing.
Have
you
been taken over.
And
what?
No, it's relaxing. It's interesting to watch someone. People love to watch people create art. I mean... I do it
art?
Myself.
Wait a second.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's not great art.
Wait, are you like Hallmark? That's like watching somebody write a Hallmark card and say, oh, that's really
no,
good writing.
No, that's entirely different.
It's the same
no,
thing.
No, one is you do for the sole purpose of creating revenue. The other you do to relax or to be yourself. I mean, Bob Ross wasn't teaching people to go and sell paintings. He was teaching people to sell to relax and take time and enjoying what they were doing.
And, that's scary.
And try to get a really bad perm.
Yeah, that too. And he's an American hero.
Here's what he said, and I put this in a column last week. We want happy paintings. Happy paintings. If you want sad things, watch the news. And he did another one. He made a little tree, and it was crooked. He didn't like it, but he said... That's a crooked tree. We'll send him to Washington. Chaunce the gardener. In the spring, there will be growth. In the garden. It's all nonsense. Jerzy Kaczynski made fun of this.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Come on.
Bob Ross is the American dream. He was a master sergeant in the military. He turned this painting thing, which he learned, he picked up on his own to try to relax, like give him something to relax
to. I'm not trying to disparage the
well,
man.
But I'm just...
I don't like this cult thing. I don't give my brain up to any cults, damn it.
Well, yeah, that's ASMR. That's I don't know. That's
a so cult thing.
Right, but he's not ASMR. I mean, that was the point.
He's the John the Baptist
no,
of ASMR. He is. He's the forerunner.
But he's not. That
with your painting, relax.
That
it's not.
The
look,
point.
It's being used. You just laid it out that the CIA has this sound thing. They shoot the sound gun at you, can make you do what you want. They want. Scott knows that painting is soothing, especially when done crappily by crappy artists
right.
who could make a painting in like 20 minutes. No artist in the history of art, except what's his name, Giotto, who made the circle, right? It could make the perfect circle.
That probably took longer than 20 minutes.
Yeah. Right?
That took him weeks.
Maybe Pollock, the drip technique. You know.
This is you know what this is, this ASMR thing? If you open the mind, if a brain is an egg and you open it up like a Hieronymus Bosch painting, you will see the result and the fruit of ASMR. Because it's really demons taking over your brain.
Not at all.
Going to hell. Cats and dogs living together.
God. Now, you said the reaction, as you were reading the story, reactions to it can be bliss, it can be sexual, it can be calming, or it can be anger. I think we're seeing that.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't like being taken. I don't like being herded. I already see the city of Chicago being herded, you know, with the Madigan Burke Gang of Four and what's going on with them.
Well, not just that, but everyone's going, these are such a, it's hard to choose because they're all such great candidates, and they are it's a very low bar. They're going to, every single one of them, except with rare exception, are going to just continue doing what's being done. It's kind of neat that Preckwinkle's being exposed for the political hack that she is.
And Mendoza's exposing herself.
Is hack the word, though? I mean, she's been pretty successful.
Yes, so what?
You can be there's a successful hack. Yeah.
How is that? I don't understand. Maybe I'm misunderstanding
the word. Let's put it this way. She partnered up with Joe Berrios.
Yeah.
Politically. Joe Berrios and those assessments directly hurt African Americans, right? And poor people. She calls herself a progressive, but she was part of the Joe Berrios crew supporting Joe.
Well, and supporting
Burke. Supporting those and taking money from Burke. You know what? Nobody raises $100,000 at the home of a alderman and a Supreme Court justice running for mayor. It just $100,000 raised at a house. I mean, do you understand politics? That doesn't happen, dude. So there were some heavy hitters, and remember, she's the one. She was helping Joe. She's African Americans and other poor people are getting hurt, according to our reporting. And then she goes to the home of a connected tax reducer like Ed Burke to make money. What is that if not hackery? Jeff Cotton. Just answer me now.
Well, I mean, so answer the minimum, the maximum is the maximum donation is $5,000. So what's that? $100,000. So how many people is you going to need? I mean, that's not unreasonable. What are you saying, John?
And the other one now, Scott Stennis.
Yes.
The other one, Mendoza.
Oh, she's so chirpy and so happy. She's a happy, happy.
She's happy, and she always says, "I'm happy, right?" Or, "I'm sad, right?" She always has that comma right thing, and it's driving me insane. What do you think of how she's handling her?
I think it's hilarious. I think the fact that she had her wedding at his house.
At Burke's house, yeah.
And she didn't say, well, it wasn't at Burke's house. It was Ann Burke's house.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There's a distinction. But it wasn't really a wedding, and it wasn't really a house.
But then when it – and so she loved Ann Burke so much that when the story of Ed Burke broke, she didn't want Ann Burke to swear her in, even though Ann Burke was her mentor or mentress or whatever, and such a dear friend. And she didn't even have the decency to call Ann Burke directly or speak to her face and say, "I can't do this. Your husband's too hot." She just dropped it in some news story. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells you everything you need to know about. And she knew how toxic that relationship was. And so there's that. Now you have, and who are the others? Jerry Chico, who's running apparently as an outsider, which to those of us who actually read, I don't know, the news, are surprised by this.
He's not only is he an outsider, Jeff Carlin, but he's lecturing people on ethics. Even though, you could put the pan flutes now, the Peruvian pan flutes, he's lecturing people on ethics, even though he abstained from votes on the Board of Education hundreds of times, while his law firm, Altheimer and Gray and others, were making money on the deal. Yes? ASMR? What about that, that baby?
That phrase doesn't mean what you think it means. yeah, I mean, my favorite quote from the recent forums, though, and this is kind of circling back on Mendoza, right. But was Preckwinkle saying, oh, look at that. Another person Susanna's got to run away from and exclude herself from and counter it instantly. Like, oh, hey, yeah, no, that wasn't me. Or, no, it wasn't as bad as it sounds. And, of course, referring to Proko Joe and all that. It's like, but come on.
We haven't even – I like all that, and I think Tony has done a pretty good job with it.
Yeah.
But you know what? We haven't – what about Bill Daly? Now, I wrote two columns on this. WFLD was going to have a forum – a mayoral debate, the first one, Bill Daly, blessed be his name, son of boss, brother of boss.
All right. People are listening to this now. They're just going to get in the cars and they're driving to Indiana. Not
they're
in
like, is Cass high?
Cass is ASMR meaning into fleeing Illinois.
As opposed to HSMR, which is like a sexual disease. Right.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No, but anyway, Bill Daly.
Burns when you pee.
Bill Daly comes, remember, he begins the campaign saying, we should have 500 debates, and everybody should speak. And it was like a big story.
Right.
Oh, Bill, you're so progressive. You're so open. You're so, you know, inclusive. You're blah, 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 blah. And they wrote it, and they talked it, blah, 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 blah. Bill Daly, blah, 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 blah.
That's some ASMR for you right there.
Yeah, and then he's right before the last week's Fox News debate, of the Burke Madigan 4 and the and Willie Wilson, the Tribune in its glory publishes a story about how the insurance test for Bill Daly was fixed and all sorts of other things.
The Chicago way,
and then Billy decides I'm not going to the forum. I'm not going to the debate.
Well, he had
is it good
the
or
plumber,
not?
The plumbers
yeah,
are more important.
Yeah, the plumbers. He had to go grab the endorsement of the plumbers union. And they do turn the river green, so there's that.
You think they wouldn't have endorsed Bill Daly, the plumbers? Wait, do you think they couldn't wait half an hour? Hey, plumbers, boys, can you just, boyos, can you wait
for an hour? Can we do this
eight
instead of seven?
We'll have our corned beef and cabbage when I get back. I'm going to first do the debate. But he didn't. Why, Jeff Carlin? Was he afraid to get questions?
I would say that he didn't want to get questions. I won't say he's afraid because I don't know him that well. But yes, I would say that he was avoiding.
He ran away like a big scaredy cat.
Which you got to give, and I hate, and I'm not circling back on Susanna Mendoza here just because. But the idea that she is at least has stood in front of everybody and be like, yeah, okay, and at least offered up an explanation for things. Or
she's floundering, and she's,
no,
she's
yes,
like
she's
a
getting,
cat in a sack, and she's ripping everything that she. You
yeah,
know,
no,
she's
I
freaking
know.
Out because this was given to her.
Oh,
she
yeah.
was the it girl.
She was
somebody. Somebody named Jeff Carlin called her the it girl, right?
Yeah.
And Tom Serafin, you guys were, oh, she's the one who has the personality.
Right.
And that's kind of going away.
Right. Even when that ad leaked out, everyone thought, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
She's in it.
So what about Paul Vallis? I thought Paul Vallis did pretty well.
I will say Paul has come on very strong in his ability to be more of a personality, persona, you know, kind of giving himself a little bravios and being entertaining. I mean, it's been good to listen to him talk almost down to the other candidates, being like, you guys are ruining this city. Your friends have ruined this city. Everyone you've related to has ruined this city. I'm going to fix the city.
But if you talk to people in the city, they don't see or believe this for a moment. They don't know that the pension payment is about to crush the city, that its bonds, that the
because
fact that the city's bonds.
That's why we did the sexual disease or ASMR, the mind control. You are not of the body of Landrieu.
They don't care.
You are the body of Daly.
I can't buy into this. It's driving me crazy because we have a bond rating that's just a tick above junk. CPS is at junk.
Right.
And they don't care. They don't know what this means. CPS voted bonds at 18%. Think about this. And
so
no one bought them because they didn't think they were any good.
So who's to blame for all this? Are you going to blame the people of Chicago? Or
yes.
Are you going to blame the lords and the oligarchs for propping up Rich Daly's little brother Bill, and I don't know if there's going to be any change then.
Who in this mix of the 14 remaining candidates do you think comes forward and says what needs to be said? I'm going to go head-to-head.
There's two of them. There's
Vallis
and Paul Vallis and Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah,
and she not to disparage another newspaper, and I would not. But the Sun-Times endorsed Lori Lightfoot. I thought that was a pretty interesting endorsement.
Front page
endorsement.
Why? And what's so interesting about it?
I think because the conventional wisdom, meaning Casso's wisdom, was that and it's often wrong, right? Was that they're a labor group owned by labor, and they would either go with Rahm Emanuel's favorite candidate, which would be Susana Mendoza, or Preckwinkle, which is SEIU's favorite candidate, and the teachers' union, or maybe go with Rahm's other favorite candidate, Billy Daly. But they went with Lori Lightfoot, who is also very progressive. It's not like they chose a conservative who would, basically cut things, but I still think she's smart.
And I have this question thinking about it. The idea of endorsements from newspapers, how do you guys feel about that? I mean, that the idea that it's, that they come out and make it and play kingmaker almost. I mean,
is it?
That's my question.
Is a cartoon by Stannis or a column by Cass just as powerful? Who knows?
That's what I would always. That's what I've suggested in the past, and I always get laughed at.
Cartoons rather than
endorsements? But something about the endorsements that, especially people under 50, don't quite understand what they are. That the institutional voice of a newspaper.
Correct.
I've suggested for years that they should have endorsements by. They should have John Cass endorsements. Scott Stannis endorses. Krista McQuarrie endorses. That we should have that kind of. I think that would be much more interesting. I think people would find that because they know where it's coming from first.
That's the thing, and that's my takeaway is because there's so many voices at a paper. I mean, a newspaper is hundreds of people working. working at it.
Yeah.
And all have their own interests, all have their own values, all have their own needs and wants. So collectively, you have all the people put their heads together and said, the best for all of us is probably this. But that's not true because the best for everyone is so individualized.
Well, we look for, as an editorial board, we look for someone who's going to, we have a record of what we expect, what we want, what our policies are. And we find a candidate that best conforms to that. At least that's the theory.
Well, look, everyone has their own opinion.
Right.
Tribune, the newspapers, as Scott said, make an opinion of the institutional opinion.
Right.
Sometimes I disagree with them. I mean, I can't lie to anybody. I mean, endorsing Obama twice was not Cass's cup of tea party,
See, my comparison is that more towards the paper there, and this is how I use it. I mean, I read in opinion and I read op-ed, but I don't take my opinion from it. I do look at what like Kristen does, where she's, here is every candidate in this race. I've talked to all of them. This is what they say they believe in. This is what they're for. This is what they want to do. You're the reader. You make your decision. Use what I've given you. I've done the legwork. I've done the hard work because it's hard to be in a democracy. Here you go.
Right.
I don't, but I feel that then you see someone who doesn't take the time to read through all that, a glancer, someone who just comes through and say, the Tribune endorses so-and-so. They must be the right one because I like the Tribune. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel it's less about what that person represents and more about, or for the average listener or reader, what they think is represented in the Tribune.
You can have, you can have editorial opinions either in the newspaper or on broadcast. But then you can have news editors of broadcast or print, especially online, selecting certain stories to promote.
Yeah.
And that has perhaps even more of an impact
for sure.
In terms of coloring or framing the debate. Like Scott Stannis, don't you?
Well, I do. I mean, there is a wall between the editorial page and the Tribune newsroom, clearly, because we endorse Republicans on a regular basis. That's one thing that people need to understand. But, news editors of different publications, they absolutely have their own bigotries and their own prejudices, and that it informs the news. Is that what you're getting at? I mean,
I wouldn't call news editors bigots, but yes, I think they have.
And for the record, John's eating to keep his blood sugar up.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
You know what? I stopped at Weber's blood sugar because I did a test. I have this thing where I test it. And
I don't want anybody to think John's being rude, but it's really out of necessity.
Well, you could hear the lip smacking.
Of course I can
hear it. All right, sorry. You know, Jake Hartford used to tell me that don't crack ice on the air, and I would always do it. You know,
that was one of Jake's. Jake would do. He'd be like, "Hey, John." Hey,
yeah,
John.
I would shake my ice at him. You know, we had a pretty, when you were producing that and we were doing that, that show was really taking off until he died.
It was, yeah.
Damn it, Jake.
He didn't take care of himself. Jerk. I'm just kidding. I love John.
So anyway, love you. Love you. The clock is your friend, Jake. But spring forward, fall back, or whatever.
Exactly.
But, you know, so I was at Weber Bakery. I was getting coffee cakes for a friend of mine. Just because we love her and she likes coffee cakes, and she should have coffee cakes. And she knows who she is, and we're thinking about her. But then I stopped, and I also got some donuts. Ooh, I got donuts at Weber and made a box and gave them to Kristen. Went into the Tribune, gave them to Kristen, so they're there. And if you go back there, there should be some still for the editorial board, of which I'm a member. Which I'm the pink flamingo on the broad lawn of the Tribune's editorial board. And I didn't eat one GD donut. And I was dying. In the Weber's, guys, with that bread, with the cakes.
Oh, yeah.
With the sweets.
Oh, God.
With the sweet rolls.
Man.
You know?
Well, my wife, is Italian. I'm French. We love bread. If my doctor said, Scott, you can't eat bread anymore, I'd have to go home and say, honey, I'm going to die.
Right.
Because right. I can't give up. I feel you, man. That must be awful.
But you know what? Bread is good with stews and with soups. But if you take the soup or the stew and just get rid of the bread, at least you have the soup. So I've got some healthy soup to make this weekend or in the next few days. Oxtail soup.
Ooh.
Is that not healthy?
Tell me what that is, because I've heard that phrase forever. Is it literally what it sounds like?
Absolutely.
The oxtail.
Don't look at me.
No, the oxtail is a long
San Diego.
Piece of piece of meat with bones in it and collagen.
Yeah,
it's really the steer's tail.
Yeah.
And it's and
the collagen is what you're after.
Oh, you braise the brown the oxtails, and then you put them in a Dutch oven with aromatics like celery, and I like to do it with pearl onions or just even larger, like onions about the size of half my fist, and fill that Dutch oven with that and oxtails, allspice, cinnamon, garlic, wine, a little stock, and braise for hours and hours. And then you take them out and put them on noodles, which I can't have anymore, noodles, and serve.
Egg noodles? What about egg noodles?
Yeah, egg noodles are perfect.
No, you know what you can have? Janine, my beautiful wife, decided we were mostly vegetarian. Yeah. Carlin just made a face, and he's right.
Carlin's...
Yeah, I'm mostly vegetarian, so I
yeah, okay,
yeah.
So but she makes zucchini, zucchini noodles.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, zucchini noodles.
They're actually not bad. There's a recommendation.
And you have a bleep thing? You have a bleep thing? Are you telling me that zucchini noodles are good? Because you are full of shit.
No.
They are not good.
Yeah, they are.
I know, because we've got a zucchini noodle maker at home.
Oh, yeah. The spiralizer?
Well, Janine is a
you know
great
what?
Cook.
Butternut
and she makes this stuff to...
Okay, are you kidding me?
No, we have cauliflower rice or broccoli rice.
I do like that. Can't go wrong with it. They do beet rice, too. You ever had beet rice? Well,
beet is full of sugar. How can
you? So you can't.
No,
do
you
that.
Can't. But cauliflower rice, the problem with it is.
You can have cauliflower potatoes. You can make
rice.
Cauliflower and mashed potatoes, which aren't. They're not. Let's face it. They're not mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes are great. But
broccoli mash is where you got to go. Broccoli mash.
Really?
Hey, Chef Carlin, if I take green apples, dice them up, put some cinnamon on them, and dump them into 0% fat Faye, that's how you pronounce it, by the way, Faye yogurt. Am I really eating an apple pie, or am I just playing with myself in sort of a ASMR way? You know? I think that's what I'm doing. I'm playing with myself. Because it's not an apple bleeping pie. And that's not pasta. Zucchini. Zucchini spindles, whatever.
Spaghetti squash around. Makes a good pasta substitute. No? All right.
Look, there's no substitute. Just drop it. There's no substitute. Take a piece of meat or chicken without skin and some tasteless other crap or some fish. Throw it on the damn grill. Cook it as hard as you want. Squirt some lemon on it, a little olive oil. Enjoy yourself. But don't tell me that you're eating pie. And don't tell me you're having, like, linguine with clam sauce. Because you have to have the linguine to have the linguine.
This is like angry ASMR.
Is it? Really? Can you please?
Yeah, it is.
Tranquil.
You can take your zucchini noodles and shove them up your...
Can you tranquilize me? Yes, Jeff. I know this is really upsetting. Jeff's making this face when I do this. He's pissed off. You're like, enough with the stupid joke, right?
No, I just think admit it's great. It's great. I just love it. It's fun.
What? What is with that thing? The whole...
I know!
What is... Why is it that we have lost complete, lost a spiritual sense of ourselves in the West, and particularly in the American West? We don't even, nobody even goes to church anymore, or very few do. And so that we look for nonsense like sexually transmitted diseases through the microphone into your ear, like HSMR or whatever it's called,
to
make you feel better and calmer.
Yes.
Calmer.
I feel zen right now.
Is that it? Is it our total lack of spiritual nature?
No.
Well, you're kind of a pro sound engineer. You're pro HSMR. AMSR.
ASMR, yes.
Yeah, why is that? Why are you pro that?
Because it's the beauty of power of sound. I mean, there's no mind control. It's not making anybody do anything. It doesn't inform. I mean, it can.
Really? Here's the sound you need to know. The sound of... There's Star Trek. There's an episode about
the
Landru.
The door's opening is my favorite.
The Landru episode.
Mm-hmm.
You are of the body of Landru. Everyone's calm. They're giving their minds over to a computer. They call it Landru.
And they're pretty much naked.
You are of the body... Or what about the Eloi? The gentle sun people. In Time Machine. And all of a sudden that sound, the air raid siren runs, blows, and then the Eloi people, who are tranquilized, basically, by lack of protein, because they don't eat any protein, just damn vegetables, so they're easily manipulated. And
zucchini noodles?
Yeah, no noodles either. Just fruits and vegetables. And then they go into the caves to be chopped up by the Morlocks, and they're happy about it. They're like, oh, I'm happy. Tell me this is what's going on, and it has to be John Cass to say Soylent Green is people? I have to say that? You don't understand?
To serve man. It's a cookbook!
Or that guy in the...
Isn't that the slogan for one of the candidates?
Yeah.
Maybe Mendoza.
To serve man. Or what about the... What about in the Body Snatchers, the first one, the black and white one with the beautiful Dana Wintour? Probably one of the most beautiful women in the history of cinema. And that other guy, that kind of nerdy guy. They're coming. They're coming, people. You know, the one who was warning about the pods, really warning about the communists. And now look, they've taken over the entire Democratic Party.
Stop! Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Make them listen to me before it's too late.
Listen to me. Please listen. If you don't, if you won't, if you fail to understand, then the same incredible terror that's menacing me will strike in you!
Stop and listen! Stop and listen to me! Listen! Listen! Listen to me! They're not human! Everyone! They're here already! You're next!
As all of you know, this podcast from behind the Iron Curtain, the Blue Iron Curtain of Illinois, is called The Chicago Way. But our next guests... Ed Bacharach is the retired CEO of Bacharach Clothing and the founder and president of the Center for Pension Integrity in Chicago. And Austin Berg, an award-winning writer, is director of content strategy at the Conservative Illinois Policy Institute and wrote the documentary film Madigan, Power, Privilege, Politics. And because of its title, They call it the New Chicago Way. And therefore, I would like to invite both of them to spaghetti dinner in Chinatown at midnight. Any of you guys want to go to dinner?
I think I'm busy that night.
Really? How about you, Ed?
Sounds good. I'm hungry.
You are, huh? Okay, because I got something for you. The Chicago Way, Ed? Come on, man. What is that? Why are you using the Chicago Way? That's my thing, dude. My thing.
Well, we rebranded it. we want people to think that there could be another way. As nihilistic as they are, they could govern differently.
That is an amazing thing. Mr. Berg, is it true that Chicagoans are nihilistic, or my friend Dan Proft accuses us of being part of the suffering from Stockholm syndrome?
That's interesting. That sounds like a very Dan thing to say. I would say we have a pretty simple political theory that operates in the minds of a lot of folks in Chicago, and it's three steps. The first one is everybody's corrupt. The second step is there's nothing we can do about it. And the third step is hands up. There's nothing we can do.
And the fourth step is how can I get some?
Fourth step is how can I get some or leave?
Right.
So what we did in the book was we interviewed dozens of people across the 15 largest cities in the country, including Chicago. And we took lessons from them on governance structure. So we didn't want to write a book that was, you know, another Royko book on the daily or something and just getting into personalities of folks. We wanted to talk about the structural factors that have led to really poor decisions for decades.
Excellent.
And for solutions, we didn't want to go to, you know, some libertarian utopia. We were going to look at Los Angeles. We're going to look at New York. We're going to look at Houston, all these places.
So. Right. Can't we just get along? I would like to, again, we are speaking of the new book, The New Chicago Way, Lessons from Other Big Cities by Ed Bacharach and Austin Berg from Southern Illinois University Press. And Mr. Bacharach, what do you make of, give us some solutions. What are some Chicago Way solutions that are new Chicago Way solutions?
Well, how about a voter-approved city constitution that the citizens determine how we're going to govern city council, the mayor's office, other elected offices, fiscal control matters, policing, schools, and every other related city entity, for starters. How about we just stop and figure that all out, take best practices from other
big
cities.
Like a new charter? Like a charter? Like a new
charter.
Way of doing things?
Okay. Yeah, you could call it new. That's a good word.
New charter.
There you go. And so the book is really interesting. I mean, it's essentially picking apart the different stories of Chicago's kind of history of malfeasance or just idiocracy. And I think, and Austin, you and I were talking before I got on air here about Migs Field and kind of the where everybody sees that as the ultimate edifice to mayoral power, and that mayors can do whatever they want essentially in this town, and they have for over 100 years. But how do we strap that power down? I mean, what do you guys feel is the next step there, or first step, really?
Yeah, we opened the book, the preface is on Migs, this guy Mike Daffenberg, who on his way to work got fired by the radio because he was the air traffic controller at Migs Field. There's a lot of people who are looking north at River North, young professionals looking out onto Northerly Island and not knowing that was ever an airfield. So when we talk about things like a charter, Chicago's the only city, along with Indianapolis, among the 15 largest, that doesn't have a true city constitution, a city charter. That's a very key solution. And one of the things you can do with a city charter, I brought a little artifact here today. It's called Modernizing a City Government. This book is from 1954 by a mayor named Martin Kennelly, who you don't really see statues to around Chicago, and it was because he was one of the true structural reform-minded mayors. And this book calls the ward system an anachronism, which is a fancy college word, I guess, for a relic of the past. And this was in the 50s.
Yes, so what I know about him.
So we don't.
You know what happened about him? His name was Martin Kennelly.
Yeah.
He was elected as a reform mayor after the Kelly Nash machine There was scandal after scandal, and people were outraged. The Chicago Tribune, blessed be its name, led reform efforts, and this reformer was elected, a Democrat. And one of the things he thought he was going to do, for you guys on the Chicago Way, saying about the new Chicago Way, although I just checked the book, and, you know, you look where the index is, I don't see any Cass in there, in the index under K. Anyway, I guess I haven't been writing about Chicago. But the Kennelly issue, Kennelly tried to get rid of the policy rackets. Does it have policy in there, in that book? Policy is a black, the old black lottery. Mr. Bacharach, you might remember it or know of it, the policy.
The policy wheels,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so he said, "I'm going to break these policy wheels because they're, you know, the whole thing is corrupt and there's too much cash." And he forgot that a guy named Sam Giancana had been in prison, and that Sam, this is the Chicago Way guys, and Sam Giancana had told his friends, his bosses, about all the money that could be made in policy. And they just thought it was a black thing, like they didn't care until they realized how much money there was. And then people started getting killed and getting their heads chopped off. And Kennelly had the police raid the policy rackets. But by then, the outfit had controlled them. So William Levi Dawson, the congressman of the 2nd District and the most powerful African-American political figure in the country. He used to come in for Roosevelt like with like 700-1 precincts. He came to Kennelly and said, "Look, dude, if you don't stop busting these policy rackets, you're out." And Kennelly didn't believe him. And guess who was elected mayor after Kennelly? Richard J. Daley. How you doing, Chicago Way?
So we talk a lot about those types of ward politics, and when we talk to other cities, their council members are legislators. They're not bosses. And the reason is, you look at Chicago, we've got about 54,000 constituents per alderman. When you only got 54,000 people, you can be in charge of the permits, you can be in charge of the signage, you can be in charge of the sidewalk cafes, you can be in charge of all zoning, you can do all this administrative
right.
You get nothing.
You get thumbs up or down on
exactly.
All that.
You are an administrative bottleneck. And the reason we talk about a charter is that the responsibilities should be elevated to issues of citywide concern in a legislative body. That should be, most importantly, a check on the mayor.
So ironically, Mr. Bacharach, Mr. Machine himself, Billy Daley, son of boss, brother of boss, comes with an idea, maybe read the advanced copy of your book, and says we should reduce this number or the size of the city council. Number one, did he get an advanced copy of your book? And two, why do you think the city council should be reduced in size?
Well, we recommend a number of reforms, not only for the city council, but for the mayor's office and other elected offices in the city. I'm going to answer two of your questions. Why a charter? Let's talk about that first. If we have a voter-approved charter, then when you have boneheaded decisions like tearing up Miggs Field or selling the parking meters, citizens have grounds for litigation against the city for violating the charter and for violating good governance. But as it has stood in the past, the city council rubber stamps something the mayor does, and nobody's got any grounds for any challenge to that. So that's the key difference between having a voter-approved city constitution or charter and business as usual as we have it right now.
When I see,
Now let's talk about the number of councilmen.
Because Daley got himself a front page story and a lot of buzz. Yeah. On broadcast, a lot of broadcast love, and he's been able to fashion himself as some kind of reformer, which to me is a laughing stock. But anyway, he's doing it, And he's using your book to do it.
Yeah. Well, but let me also talk about reducing the number.
Yeah.
That's got to be one piece of a comprehensive reform of city government. It can't be just isolated, but taken by itself. First of all, symbolically, we have to abolish the term and the concept of an alderman and a ward. We have to have city councilmen who have council districts. We have to have fewer so that these people are elected by more constituents. We need to prohibit aldermanic privilege. And then we have a situation where the councilmen are going to focus on major citywide issues,
Mr.
along
Burke.
With robust committee oversight and independence from the mayor. So
gotcha.
That's the whole package.
That's a wonderful thing, and I hope it happens. But except for this, Mr. Berg, years ago, I covered City Hall.
I heard about that.
I'm not mentioned in your index, but I did cover City Hall. And what happened was some reformers offered this, and I'm sure you know the story now because I've been saying it often and often around the city. Some reformers offered the idea, I think it was a civic committee or someone, let's reduce the size of the council and make it more efficient so that we don't have all these 50 aldermen think they're lords of the land. And you know what? I walked into Rich Daley's office, and there's Tim Degnan, who's his political muscle guy, and Pat Hewels. And I'm like, hey, boys, you know, it's just like Miller's Crossing, like that movie. Like I'm like the Gabriel Byrne character. And I'm like, hey, boys, what's with the reduction of the council? Because the Tribune had an editorial, the Sun-Times, it was like a buzz.
It was hot.
Hot thing, buzz. Good. And they all left because reducing the size of the council was about control, and they wanted to reduce it, which is why that is not, with all due respect, that's not the New Chicago way. Reducing the size of the council is about executive and centralized control when we need more representation, not less.
If we had to pick between reducing the number and changing the responsibilities would be way top of the list. The thing about reducing the size is that you get to a point where it's totally unworkable to do the types of administrative bottlenecking that's done currently. So, and I think you'll also find there are one of the reasons we wrote the book is even the most progressive, reform-minded aldermanic candidate does not talk about how other cities do things unless they're talking about electing CPS. That's right. Really the only time we ever pick our heads up and look around at stuff. Nobody talks about the fact that Los Angeles, which has around 50% more people than Chicago and double the land area, pays the same for police and fire as Chicago. Why is that? That should be as much part of the discussion as, you know, say a city charter or reducing the number of aldermen. But Daley, I think, so we ran on January 2nd, we had an op-ed in the Tribune,
right.
And hopefully people read it, but we would like more people to be talking about
it. And January 3rd, Daley held a news conference or talked to his friends in the press and said, hey, I have a good idea. Reduce the size of the council. I'm a reformer, Jeff Carlin.
I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
Mr. Bacharach.
John, let me add to this.
Yeah.
A part of being comprehensive, in addition to changing the number of councilmen, eliminating the symbolism, we have to have the council presided over by a council president and not the mayor. Separate the council from the mayor. We need to eliminate having the mayor fill vacancies. They should be filled by special election. We should have an elected chief financial officer instead of having Ed Burke, the unelected chief financial officer. And we should have an elected city attorney instead of a disgraced city law department that reports to the mayor. So this is painting a picture of comprehensive reform.
But so what's the first step here, though? I mean, obviously knowledge is the, you know, builds momentum to this. But where's the concrete first step in changing this or setting this in motion?
The first step is the creation of an independent lay charter commission. Charter Commission is not going to be the city council writing an ordinance to enact superficial reforms. There needs to be either an appointed or an elected charter commission that includes John Cass and many other notables in the city.
I don't think so. I'd rather be a scrivener.
Okay.
But go on. I'll let you guys reform. I'll just watch the antics.
Yeah.
Go on.
But that's the first step. And then people can start to put the heat on the charter commission to come up with a charter that resembles the charters that every other major city in the United States has and revises regularly.
But to get the charter through, or to get this, you know, once you've got the thoughts and we're on paper, then to get it enacted, you've got to convince the guys who you're going to take power from to give up seed power. And how does that happen? Where's the imagination that's going to make that happen?
The way it works, you can get the guide to charter creation and revision from the National Civic League. And once you create that commission, the commission comes up with their recommendations. And they don't have to get a true city council. They put it to the voters. It's up to the voters to approve.
But you still got to get on the ballot.
You have to get to that point. And Mr. Berg, I would ask you, as a student of history, when the equestrians in Rome, when the equestrians decided to do something and change the way they were governing the people, sometimes they had to go to a part of Rome that was, like, let's say, kind of like a Chinatown, but not Chinese people or Asian people.
I thought you were going to say Springfield.
Yeah, kind of like that too. You know, with the road builders, and you have to go to people that are sort of earthy. And you have to get them, the earthy types, to get the other equestrians in line. That's how it really works. So where are your earthy types to get the equestrians in line so that the Roman Republic may flourish once again?
So only 20% of the Illinoisans in our state live in the city of Chicago. It turns out 80% of them live outside of the city limits.
I'm not talking about horse riders, right? I'm not.
I don't know what equestrian means. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a long word. Mm-hmm. But so a big part of the book, we have a whole chapter on what we would need to change in state law. And it turns out there's a guy down there who's from the Southwest side who's been down there for many years. And I actually wrote a documentary film about him that I think may have featured the voice of someone who later had to apologize. But we don't have to get into that.
No, we should.
Today,
we should. That caused me great grief. I did apologize. And you were with the Illinois Policy Institute then. I thought it was a documentary on Mike Madigan. I've been critical of Mike Madigan. I did it. I participated, and what I didn't realize was I did not tell my bosses that I was going to do it, and I didn't realize it was like highly political in that sense, and it was, and so I apologized, because that's what you do when you're wrong, even though the sentiments weren't, I don't apologize for the sentiments, I did apologize for doing that.
But we learn the strongman governance of the Illinois House is very similar to the strongman governance of Chicago, as of course you know. But you would need a state law to empower the city of Chicago in order to write its own charter. And if you talk to people in Belleville, or if you talk to people in Carbondale, if you talk to people in Springfield or Champaign, I think they would be pretty excited to have on the ballot the ability to give the people of Chicago the power of self-governance. So I'm hopeful for that. I'm also hopeful. Did you guys watch by chance a couple months ago, of all people, Chance the Rapper put out a video on Chicago aldermen and aldermanic privilege?
Yeah, yeah.
One of the most entertaining explanations that I've ever seen. That was really hopeful for me. And I think hopefully having some kind of blueprint, at least a vocabulary for talking about what other cities do and how we're such an outlier on governance structure and aldermanic privilege and things like this, hopefully that can help.
The book is called The New Chicago Way, Lessons from Other Big Cities by Ed Bacharach and Austin Berg. I suggest you read it. But you guys haven't endorsed a candidate for mayor, have you? Are you going to?
Nope.
Isn't that a step?
We like to say the question in Chicago is always who, who. It's a tree full of owls. our book answers the question of how, not who.
Very good. I really appreciate that. And although I think it's a dodge, but I still respect it. Thanks for being here, gentlemen, on the real Chicago Way. And this is the place where we don't have any unicorns floating amongst us, but I still wish you well.
Well, Bill Daly owes you a unicorn still, doesn't he?
Yes, didn't he say he was going to give me
a unicorn? Yeah,
yeah, a purple one.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a multicolored.
We'll have to ask him about that.
Thanks, guys, for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
For Ed Bacharach and Austin Berg, authors of The New Chicago Way, Lessons from Other Big Cities, but even though they didn't even have me in the index, and it's called The Chicago Way, and it's about Chicago and corruption. I don't know about that. And Scott Stennis, the award-winning cartoonist and also host of Prickly City Podcast. And for Jeff Carlin with a C, not the guy who eats cheese, the C, Jeff Carlin, WGN executive producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, an acolyte in the ASMR movement. We will control you. Do not touch that dial. See you next week.
Let's all experience something together. This place, so pure, you can feel it. Michelob Ultra Pure.